All right, this is Karen Brewster, and today is November 3rd, 2021, and I'm here with Dan Seavey at his lovely home in Seward, Alaska. And this is for the Iditarod National Historic Trail Project Jukebox Project. So thank you, Dan, for letting me come see you today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for for your interest in this.
Yeah, well, since you've been interviewed before on a Project Jukebox, we won't go into your whole life story. but I do know that you came to Seward in
1963.
Okay,
in August of 1963, on the 19th day of August, and the only reason I remember is that's my birthday.
Oh, okay. And I know you were a social studies teacher for a long time.
22 years.
Okay.
Right.
And here in Seward, you got into dog mushing, and I'm assuming that what led you to this Iditarod National Historic Trail project.
That's a good assumption.
So why don't you tell me how you got involved in the trail part of it? Was it because you ran in the race?
Well, but before the race, I was here and teaching Alaska history to high school students, and of course you can't teach Alaska history out without running into gold rushes and trails and dog teams and what amazed me, I guess, early on was the importance of Seward to the whole territory, with being situated as we are on the water, on the ocean, and ice-free port, and then the efforts to settle the town, and of course to build the railroad out of Seward North, and the importance of Seward to the territory, and that was also true of out westward. Seward was kind of the service center, so to speak, at that time. And so here we are, we're an important place historically, and there used to be trails going out of here, you know, that sort of thing. And of course I got involved with dog mushing as soon as we moved out here. I mean, end of 1964 I had probably more dogs than I should have had already.
So what got you into mushing? Why dog mushing?
Just the glamour of the it's sort of fantasy stuff. As a junior high kid, you know, the that sort of thing.
That's the phone. Okay, we'll pause for a second. Okay, the excitement of dog mushing.
Right. As I mentioned in my book, it probably started when I was in the fifth grade in a one-room country school in rural Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And the teacher would read the Jack London stories to us, you know. And I can remember doing a map study of Alaska and turning to my map partner, say, hey, you know what, we need to go to Alaska when we grow up. And you know, that took off from there, of course, and eventually it took me, I was 25 when I moved up here, so it took a while. A college degree and marriage and three kids, but we got here.
That's great. And so what was your role in the first Iditarod dog sled race?
Okay. So imagine I'd been mushing for about 10 years, so I wasn't, wasn't new to dog mushing. And we had joined the Aurora Dog Mushers Club up in Kinnick. And that, of course, brought me into contact with Joe Reddington and several other kind of die-hard mushers. And we'd go up there for fundraisers and what have you, and spent probably more time drinking coffee and talking about it after these short races, you know. And they had kids races and what have you, which we had some kids to enter. And we got thinking, well, you know, we should do a long race. And it was the Alaska Purchase Centennial in 1967.
Right.
You know, then, and I never entered that, but there was a race, about a 50 miler, about a big lake. But the point is that that race was important since it brought a lot of mushers together. And I have an appendix in my book of all the mushers that were there, and they were the notables of the time that participated in that race. And about 9 miles of the original Iditarod Trail was used in that race.
Okay.
And
was that original, was that 9 miles brushed out and usable, or the...
Yeah.
Or they cleared it for that
No,
race?
I think it was usable at okay. the time, yeah. So after that, then we got talking about a real serious long distance race, and we looked at the records of the All Alaska Sweepstakes. You know, it was held in the 19-teens in Nome,
right.
408 miles from Nome to north to the coast and back, and. So we got looking at that, and well, then one thing led to another, and well, why don't we have a race to Iditarod, since the Iditarod Trail is here, and we can, you know, with some work, we can get it ready for a race. And someone, I think it was probably Howard Farley from Nome, said, why do you want to go just to Iditarod? There's nobody there to see you come in. It's a ghost town, right?
Mm-hmm.
A gold rush ghost town. There's nobody to see you come in, and nobody will know when you leave. So then he suggested going on to Nome. So that's kind of the germ that mm-hmm. was germinated for that race. And there were a few of us that worked pretty hard on it. Tom Johnson, Galil Hike, there's probably half a dozen. You know how it is with any club. There's probably half a dozen that are the doers, you know.
But you were all members of the Aurora Dog Mushers.
Right,
club.
Right.
Well, and then in on the Nome end, Howard Farley.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Reddington.
Yeah, and that, and of course, Vi and Joe, they were instrumental in the Centennial race as well, and as was Dorothy Page.
But she wasn't a musher, was she?
No, she's a historian.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so she just had a personal interest,
right,
in the history.
Right.
Yeah, she was in Palmer or.
In Wasilla.
Wasilla, okay.
Yeah.
And you said somebody hike. What was that person?
A Gleo. Like Gleo. G-L-E-O.
Oh.
Hike, and it's a tough spelling. H-Y-A. I forget how to spell it.
H-Y-K-E, maybe, or something?
Yeah, something on that order.
Okay, all right.
He's still around.
Oh, okay.
Gleo is in up there in Wasilla.
Okay. And then was Leo Rasmussen, was he involved?
From the Nome end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
From the Nome end.
And then you and anybody else from the Knik Wasilla end?
Well, I'm trying to remember the names now. I have them in my book.
Okay.
They're accessible.
anybody in particular who, yeah, I mean, that centennial race, 50 miles, nowadays, that doesn't sound like long.
No, but it, you know, it was then, well, even the sprint races, you know, like the Rendezvous race,
right,
in Anchorage, I mean, that added up. There's 3 days of 25 miles, you know,
right,
but it's 25 a day.
Right.
So, yeah. But, so anyway, it was decided we would go to Nome. Well, you know, talked about it, and finally Gleo and Tom just kind of took the bull by the horns and kind of got Joe committed for sure, and they went from there. Organized it. It's interesting. They decided on the race. We decided on the race in October, and we put it on in March.
That's pretty amazing.
I mean, considering that, considering all there was to do, and you know what we had to do.
Yeah, you had to organize all the villages as checkpoints and things.
Right.
And it was all volunteers.
All volunteers.
Wow.
Yep. And of course, Joe, being the showman that he is, he, you know, $50,000 purse. That was unknown in mushing circles.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot of money, a lot,
yeah,
more money then than it is now. But still, you know, it's peanuts compared to, you know, swing a golf,
right,
club in the afternoon. And
so, how did he raise that much money?
Well, that's another story.
Okay.
That's another story. The money wasn't completely raised, so to speak, on the day that we left. And the reason Joe didn't run that purse race was he was busy scrambling around trying to get the purse,
yeah,
that he promised. And as it turned out, I loaned, what was it? I don't know, half of my earnings on in the race for third place. Anyway, I shelled out so they could pay the rest of the places down, you know.
Oh, right.
Was a loan. I eventually got paid back.
Yeah, but so, as you say, that 9 miles was the historic trail, right? That was for the official Iditarod as well as the centennial race, I guess. For the first Iditarod, how did you decide what route you were going
to
take?
Well, as near as possible to the Iditarod. I mean, the old historic,
uh-huh,
trail.
How did you find out where that route went?
Well,
it's not like you could walk along and see.
No,
it.
And in fact, we mushed dogs out of Kinnick. I mean, stayed up there. Quite a few teams.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Mackey and myself. Ron Aldrich, Joe Reddington, worked on the trail out of Kinnick. And, you know, Joe had a homestead on,
yeah,
Flat Horn Lake out there, so we went right along beside that. And then where it was obscure, they actually used light planes to kind of, you know, figure out where the trail went from the air, scout the trail, right. And that led to Joe was flying in those days, and that led to him cracking up a plane out there. And there was some tense hours, and, you know, we didn't know what happened to him, but he survived it, and it was one of those dramas.
Well, could you see the old route from the air?
Pretty much.
Really, it hadn't all grown in.
Well, it was growing in, but in orderly fashion, you know.
And it would be different vegetation,
right,
maybe.
Right, right.
Okay.
So I wasn't up there in the air at all, but they did. And then enlisted people along the trail for different segments, like Joe Delia and some of those guys.
Where was he from?
Squint now, out in that country.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that people in the communities maybe would have used parts of the historic trail right. as their links to the
right.
other communities.
Right, and that's what I was going to get at. A lot of the trail, at least up on the coast, was still being used.
Okay.
But a good deal of it, this side of the mountains, of course, had fallen into this, you know, fallen into
right.
simply not being used. I mean, grown over and what have you.
Right. And certainly, as we will talk about further, the southern part here
right.
from Seward completely wasn't being used.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, you didn't have all this fancy GPS and, you know, things
no.
for Joe to use in the air. Like, yeah, so how did you combine that, what he saw in the air and being on the ground?
Well, there would be somebody on the ground, of course, probably a crew working, the way I see it anyway. There'd be a crew working and, okay, now what? Where we go? And then you point to it.
Okay.
Oh, we got to cross this creek here and, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was a huge undertaking, and we were pretty optimistic and what have you about, you know, we're going to build cabins and this sort of thing along the way and what have you. Well, that was all talk, as it turned out, you know.
You're lucky to even get the trail marked.
Right, exactly.
And it didn't, the race trail does not follow the historic trail 100%,
no,
correct?
No, but close to it.
Yeah.
Close to it, yeah.
Yeah. And then the Serum Run, which everybody gets all these things confused and combined, the Serum Run didn't use the trail at all?
Oh, yes.
Or did it use parts of it?
It did. The Serum, of course, left Nenana.
Right.
But when it in down the Tanana and the Yukon, but when it hit Ruby,
oh, okay.
it's on the Iditarod
okay,
Trail.
From there on, okay.
Yeah. And one thing in, also about the Serum Run, and this, I hope that we can dispel that misunderstanding, that the Serum Run did not inspire the Iditarod race.
Right.
It was all Alaska sweepstakes in Nome that we patterned, even took the rules, basically.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, so, but everyone thinks, or so many people think anyway, that, well, this is kind of, you know, commemorating the Serum Run, which it was not. I can honestly say, I mean, I sat across the table a lot of times, and I never heard the Serum Run mentioned once. But
yeah.
the All Alaska Sweepstakes we talked about, and we wanted to see the rules and
mm-hmm.
how could we alter them. And again, in my book, I have the rules for the first race, and you can get them on one page practically. And
yeah.
of course, now is practically a book.
Oh, yeah.
For rules.
And they have to keep updating it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've heard of the All Alaska Sweepstakes, and I've seen pictures of teams, you know, out there in Nome, but I didn't realize it was 400 miles. I thought they were sprint races.
Oh, no, no.
Because I've never
408
researched
miles,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. out there, that's pretty good. So, what do you see the connection between the starting of the dog racing with the Centennial and then the Iditarod with this effort to get the trail designated as a National Historic Trail?
Well, I think the two broad goals was to give the sled dog a purpose so he could exist. Because let's face it, the era of the snow machine was starting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Iditarod race, the hope was that sled dogs can be salvaged, so to speak, and useful, and the other, of course, was to get the Iditarod Trail included in the national trail system.
Okay. Do you know how you guys would have heard about the national trail system and that they were adding historic trails?
Well, I mean, it's in the news. I mean, it's common knowledge.
Okay.
And it would be published, I'm sure. That's where I first heard of it.
Okay.
Because it's relative to Alaska, you know. Another spin-off on those two goals I mentioned was, of course, the designation of mushing as a state sport.
Oh, I didn't know that. Has it been?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And that's another, we worked for that, to get that done.
And that was about the same time?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I can't give you a date on that, but it was in the early years of the race, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one being in 1973.
So, how did you end up getting involved in the advocacy for the trail designation?
We all had tasks, right? And mm-hmm. I guess I was supposed to be the Kenai Peninsula rep. I'm supposed to stir up interest. And I did write some articles in local papers and you know, talk to people and what have you, drumming up interest, and wrote some letters to the politicians, as many of us did.
Mm-hmm. And did you do historic research?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what got me going on this in the first place. And particularly the Seward's important position, mm-hmm. you know, historically. And I was interested in that. So it all kind of came together with the race. You know, it's,
mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think... many people, including myself, before I started this project, is they think of the Iditarod Trail is because of the race. They don't know that the Iditarod Trail has a historic gold mining, gold rush time period use, where it was the route from Seward to the gold fields.
Right. And that's a common, you know, that's common.
Yeah.
Common belief. And when we got into the work of the advisory council mm-hmm. for the trail, and looked at the comprehensive management plan for the trail, which was first put out, I'm not sure just when, but in the late 70s, 1970s anyway.
The first one has a 1981 date on it, I think, is when it was released.
I'm wondering, 1981, okay. Anyway, I actually read the thing. Yeah. And lo and behold, the Kenai Peninsula would have had to been satisfied with, certain segments would be used, you know, the old Johnson Pass Trail mm-hmm. and that sort of thing would be used as a trail, but where they can't tie them together, we're going to do signage. And
so like on the highway?
On the highway,
highway that is now over what was the trail, there'd be a sign that says...
Yeah, you know, like when you're outside, you're driving along the Oregon Trail
right.
or what have you, you know.
Yeah.
But... So what I did, we had two reps on that first council.
From down here?
From Seward, yeah. And actually I represented the Kenai Peninsula and Mike Meehan mm-hmm. represented the city of Seward.
Okay.
So anyway, we got our heads together and we petitioned the council for actual physical trail. Just give you some idea what.
This is the Trailblazers Incorporation. Okay.
But anyway, we with that letter, we petitioned the advisory council. That was a 20-person advisory council, the first one, and asking that in the final plan, this was the pioneer plan.
Right.
In the final plan, that we have provisions for an actual physical trail on the Kenai Peninsula.
Not just signs.
Not just big place, big blank places filled in with just signs.
Yeah. Well, so but what do you do if the original trail was under a road now? How do you get a physical trail?
Well, you make it.
Oh, you just reroute.
Reroute. Oh, yeah. And that would be called an alternate trail. And the fact of the matter is, except for the Johnson Pass segment of the trail, almost all of this down here is alternate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that the railroad and the road used the best way, which would have been the way the trail went.
Exactly.
The trail doesn't go up and over the mountains.
No, and so, I mean, it's all understandable, but no, we want a trail.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, that was, what, 41 years ago? And, you know, it's just been the last 5, 6, 7 years, well, pretty much since the Alliance was formed. Mm-hmm. That we actually are working that.
I know you have advocated very hard for that Southern Trek part for a long time.
Right. And, yeah. You know, it's happening.
That must be satisfying.
It's very satisfying. That's what I, you know, if there's any pride in this for me, it's that right there, because mm-hmm. that meant we're going to have eventually, which we are now experiencing, a physical Iditarod National Historic Trail on the Kenai Peninsula.
And is it going through Forest Service land?
Yep.
You don't have to deal with private
land. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's private land in that, but it's mostly forest, and that's a plus. And the Forest Service has come on board strong here now, the last 10 years or so. So. Yeah, no, we're really pleased with what's happening there.
Has there been a change in demand from the public for trails?
Oh, heavens, it's mushroomed. I mean, I can't believe so many people out walking in the woods as they are, but no, and they find all, even little obscure trails, you know, they look at old mining maps or something, and so it's great. The trail use is, oh yes, many times.
So you think that's helped with the efforts for the getting the Southern Trek put in?
Well, numbers are important to, especially to the government.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can tally up, big numbers, that helps in the funding and so forth. The thing that I think the major improvement, or the major, what would I call it? Item in this whole progression in getting the trail established has been the designation of a permanent person by the BLM. Because when we first started out, these guys were they were given like 1 month of time to the trail, you know. They were, and they had other jobs. Now with right now we have Kevin Keeler,
right.
We have a full time BLM guy as a director for the whole trail.
Right.
And I mean, it makes it made a big difference. Not that these other guys weren't interested. We had Terry O'Sullivan was the first one for several mm-hmm. years. Terry O'Sullivan, and then Dean Littlepage,
mm-hmm.
and then the last before the Alliance was formed, Mike Zadlich. And yeah, I'm not sure on the spelling. But
I can. That's okay. Yeah. I guess I thought Terry and Dean and Mike were also full-time
Mm-mm.
trail administrators.
Nope.
They had other duties?
Oh, yeah. They were part-time administrators. Yep. So, with Kevin, it's, and he's doing a great job, I think. He's interested in it. Not that these other guys weren't, but they had, you know, they had alternate lives.
Yeah, other duties as assigned.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So how did you end up getting on the advisory council? You were the part of the first ones.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You didn't volunteer?
Well, no. No, I was, as far as I know, because I was contacted by somebody, you know, maybe it was O'Sullivan, I'm not sure. And would you be willing to be, you know, appointed to the advisory council? And as far as I know, I was recommended by the borough mayor, the Kenai Peninsula borough mayor.
Okay.
And then the other guy from Seward, Mike Meehan, he was a nominee of the Seward
city
council.
Well, so, say that your involvement with getting the first Iditarod dog race going and that sort of trail advocacy, and you'd been already writing letters and things, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I was involved. I noticed on that list of members, there was, I'm not sure, I know Ken Chase was a musher, and Mary Shields.
Mm-hmm. Edgar Callan, but
he was a serum run guy.
Right. Ken Chase, Ray Collins from McGrath.
I don't think so. Not the first race.
Andy Edge from Nome.
No, I think those were the ones that I remember anyway. Yeah. That were involved with the first race.
Right. Well, yeah. Jack Garrison, Big Lake would be another name.
Not first race anyway. Okay. I got, again, in my appendix in my book, I have those. All those
right, but those were people who were on the first council appointed in 1981.
Right.
You know, and Joe Reddington.
Yeah, he was the chairman.
He was the chairman, who could have been mushers. Other ones there from Anchorage, but Clyde Peters from Galena, he could have been
he could have been, but...
He wasn't a racer.
No, but what I'm saying is, I'm not all that acquainted with who all was in the race after. See, I ran in 73 and 74, and after that, I didn't pay much attention.
You're right.
Who was racing, who wasn't.
Right. But I was just thinking who was a musher, not a racer,
right.
That, you know, living in Galena, he could have been. And Mary Shields in Fairbanks certainly
right.
was.
Oh, yeah.
She wasn't racing yet, I don't think, was she?
Mary Shields was, she ran the second race in 74.
Oh, I knew
first woman.
I knew she was the first woman. I thought it was a little bit later.
No, 74.
Okay.
Yeah. It was all male the first race.
Yeah.
we got him. I always think about it. That's so funny because Rick Swenson, you know, bless his heart, he's run that thing so many times, 30 some, and of course, five-time champion. And one of the races closer to the end of his when he was battling with Susan Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be the day when any blankety blank woman will beat me. And my gosh, if Susan didn't whoop up on him the very next race, I thought that.
And she had to prove to him he was wrong.
And it's great. I think that, boy, there's some tough gals out there.
Yeah. Before the comprehensive plan came out, there was a study done by the Bureau of Recreation, the Gold Rush trails.
Yeah.
Is that what you were thinking of as something in the 70s? Because that came out in 78, I think.
Yeah, it came out prior, right? Yeah, prior to. But they had a commission, and okay, so Alaska is eligible for this Gold Rush category of trails. So what are they? And so they did have a commission put together, you know, representative of the population. And they came up with this 2037 mile primary trail and connecting trails for the mm-hmm. Iditarod. Of course, there were other trails, and they were handled separately, I assume,
right.
You know, like Chilkoot and
right.
some of those.
Yeah. Right. But so they didn't talk with you during that study.
No.
You weren't involved
no.
in that. Okay.
No.
So you really got involved in 81 on the council.
Yeah.
So do you remember some of the early work the council did?
Well, to be honest with you, no. And this is not a fair assessment, but it's fairly close. It seemed to me that those early meetings, council meetings, main object was to plan what date the next one's going to be. And I say that because, with tongue in cheek, because our hands were tied for one thing. Even the administrators, you know, the Terry O'Sullivan or Little Pager, they didn't have any money.
Oh, right.
The appropriations. I mean, what do we, okay, we got this trail and we got this plan, but you know, it takes money.
Right.
You know, so the money was very slow in coming, and I can't be honest with you. I can't think of any real important stuff we did in those early days, except to keep the engine idling anyway.
Do you remember how often you had meetings? Like, was it a regular?
It seemed like a couple a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you'd go up to Anchorage for those?
Yeah. We did have a meeting in Nome one time. The idea was to meet around different places, but that's the only one I remember.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Nome. That was real interesting for all of us in the fall.
And were you getting public comment from Nome about what people thought about the trail or what should be done with it?
Well, that I don't know. I really don't know. Can't remember anything like that. I'm sure we were, because Nome was an important, you know, especially for the race.
Mm-hmm.
The race and the trail are so intertwined, it's hard to separate them.
Yeah. For you guys who did both.
Right.
Yeah. I think maybe for some of the people on the council or alliance who aren't mushers and racers.
Right.
Maybe that's easier for them to separate, but I can see. For you, it would be.
For me, of course, we had the local trailblazers.
Yeah, that's the other thing I want to ask you.
You know, and then of course I ran the race. By that time I've run it five times total, but you know, by that time a couple only, and then I've served on the race board,
right?
The ITC. and the advisory council and the alliance.
Yeah.
So it gets interwoven for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. So can you tell me a little bit about the Trailblazers, because this a document you showed me is the constitution of the corporation.
Oh,
the
that's Seward, not. Oh, I'm, that's not for me.
Iditarod Trailblazers is what you.
Yeah,
that showed
me here. This is what I wanted.
Oh, that was the letter?
Yeah.
And I'll take
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll take pictures.
I didn't know I had that kind. The Trailblazers, well, the...
Oh, yeah, this is the... Well, this is the Iditarod Historic Trail Seward to Portage Side Trail. Approved a proposal jointly by
yeah,
Mike
there
and
we
Dave.
Go.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
See, that was to the council, and that's what got us our foot in the door
right.
for a on-the-ground trail instead
right.
of signage.
Right. Yeah, he proposed actions. Yeah, well, I'll take pictures of both
yeah.
of these. Even
yeah.
your constitution is so... Yeah, so tell me about the Trailblazers.
Well, the comprehensive management plan for the trail calls for... what they refer to as trailblazer organizations along the trail. And it's supposed to have been a kind of a citizens type trail pattern after the Appalachian Trail somewhat, where you have segments and, you know, there's organizations that are responsible for those segments, and that was the that's what the management plan called for. Mm-hmm. So it seemed appropriate that we here in Seward should form a trailblazer group, and which we did. I guess the force behind that, so to speak.
This doesn't have a date on this.
No, we were incorporated in 1982.
Okay.
But we functioned a couple years prior to that.
Okay.
Right from the get-go, pretty much. And over the years, I mean, we've done a lot of stuff over the years, for sure. Major projects, like the bike path along the beach in Seward.
The one that, in town?
Yeah, that was our project. And it's the beginning of the Iditarod Trail, of course.
Okay.
And we've done a lot of brushing. We've trail building.
Have you done anything with the connecting segments on the Southern Trek?
Well, we have brushed and what have you, you know, in the Moose Pass area and what have you.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you've been out helping to delineate that trail better.
Right, right. In fact, some of it we just claimed. It was on Forest Service. There's like logging roads. And we just claimed them and hung our signs on them.
With your Iditarod Historic Trail sign?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And now, see, that's been probably some of it 50 years ago. So they actually are historic trails, I mean, by law. But anyway, you know, that sort of thing. We worked with the local Forest Service, which have been pretty cooperative over the years. But then other things that are more visible, I suppose, is like the Centennial statue. Did you see that down by the Sea Life Center there?
Not recently.
Yeah, well, that's a trailblazer project, probably $60,000 there or so.
And it's to celebrate the centennial of?
Of the historic trail.
Okay.
Yeah. And we did another of Wada.
Jujira Wada.
Yeah. There's a statue of him, another 50, I suppose, thousand.
And that's a statue here in Seward?
Yeah. Oh. Oh, yeah, right, yeah. And now we're in the midst of doing another one in memory of Alfred Lowell, who was he and Wada kind of pioneered the trail out of Seward, you know. So yeah, and that's going to be another 60,000. So I mean, we're always up to something, you know.
So where do you get the money for those projects? That's a lot of money.
Oh, beg, borrow, steal, whatever it takes. No, actually, pretty much grants.
Okay.
Pretty much grants. Yeah.
You have somebody in the Trailblazers organization who writes grants for you guys?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because again, it's all volunteers, right?
Right, mm-hmm.
And then you have membership?
Yep, we have membership. We probably have, right around 100 members.
How many on your board?
Five.
Okay. Yeah, by the name Trailblazers, you know, I know there's also, or there was one in Knik, the Knik Trailblazers.
Yeah, right, and that one has been, you know, kind of a hit and miss. It's not organized legally, we are.
Mm-hmm.
501c3, but they rise up and descend. But you know, we encourage it. We've tried to get one going in Moose Pass, and it hasn't happened.
Is there one in McGrath?
Oh yeah, that the ones right now. Karen is Seward and McGrath and Nome.
And the Nome, it's the Trailblazers. It's not the Nome Kennel Club.
It's the Nome Kennel Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Trailblazer group.
Okay.
And they're active, of course.
Yeah. Well, then, as I say, the name Trailblazers, to me, I think of it, it's you're the people out blazing
yeah,
the trail,
right.
Which is, you know, you're marking it and
right.
clearing the brush and packing it down.
Well, that's
winter.
What they do, that Nome Kennel Club. I mean, they don't have much brush to cut, but
right.
they got trail to maintain and what have you. And they're doing a good job up there.
Yeah, and in the winter, I think, you know, they're the ones who go out with the snow machines and
yep.
break the trail. And
yep.
So it's interesting to hear that the Seward Trailblazers does all this other
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, we have alder that's very persistent and willow. And
yes.
we have floods that wreck trails and what have you. So yeah, it's a whole different story. But you know, they perform a real important function.
And now the Seward Trailblazers, are they just focused on the Iditarod Historic Trail, or do you do work on other trails?
Well, no, we're pretty much focused on the Iditarod. Yeah.
Okay.
Although we do stuff like clean up. We got a stretch of the Exit Glacier Road that we do the cleanup
mm-hmm.
on, you know, and that. But no, we're pretty much focused.
And you do advocacy for the supporting the historic trail?
Oh, yes. Yes. For instance, many years ago now, we drew up what we call our Blue Line map. This was, had a map professional draw this thing up, and actually all the way to Nome. And what I'm getting at is, okay, we had this map done, and we distributed it to what people we thought was, you know, would be important to, including the borough land office. Well, one day I got a phone call. Hey, Stevie, you know there's a driller up in the middle of the trail up by Bear Lake, drilling down through the surface. And I said, well, what are they doing? They said, they're looking to see if the soil would be good enough for a borough landfill.
Yeah.
I said, well, that's interesting. We don't want to detour our trail around the dump. So I call up the borough mayor. I said, you know, you've got a driller up here right in the middle of the Iditarod National Historic Trail. And he said, what? Yeah. I said, go to your land office and check it out, Little Bear Lake, just a little bit south of that. So he did, and an hour or so later he called me back. He said, well, they'll be out of there by tonight. So that's the kind of advocacy
yeah.
that we try to do.
That requires a lot of vigilance on your part.
Oh, yeah. And then, for instance, when the stretch of trail between Nash Road and Bear Lake, North Bear Lake, we took out, when we first claimed that segment, we took out about 8 old deserted vehicles,
mm-hmm.
hooked onto them with a Caterpillar tractor and dragged them up, and eventually got them to the dump. But that sort of thing. And then it was, two, 3 years later, there's another 3 or so up back there. So we finally arranged the trailhead so they couldn't get in there so easily. But I mean, that kind of stuff is sort of everyday maintenance, I guess, anymore, you might say.
Well, that was part of a question, was how do you work on stewardship so people appreciate that this is a trail and that it doesn't get destroyed?
Right. Well, we have Pulaski and I, we have our dog and pony show. And we go to different places. We've gone to many places, like seniors in Cooper Landing or the Hope School, you know, any place we get our foot in. And we do a presentation on the trail. And that's pretty much the work of Lee Pulaski. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does the work. But anyway, we do that sort of thing. And we do trail days, you know, the National Trail Day.
Mm-hmm.
Down here. We generally have something along the bike path there and track people and at least get them to take our brochure when they leave. that sort of thing. So we're pretty busy. This China plague, as I call it, has put a damper on some of that stuff, but it'll eventually get back.
Yeah. So what's the brochure that you give out?
It's one I don't know.
Is it from the Alliance?
No, the Trailblazers has, we have one in the Alliance also, but ours is, I mean, it's a Trailblazer one, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the Alliance one, but, but also, I was also thinking, besides public education, which you guys are doing a lot of, working with the land managers, your example with the borough and the landfill.
Right.
The trail isn't on their maps or in their comprehensive plans?
Well, it is now, yeah. Oh, yeah, very definitely. And we're getting good vibes from the borough administration. In fact, one of them sees the Iditarod Trail as a super plus for the borough, which it is. Because there are people, certainly once the Southern Trek is completed, I mean, it's going to be a boom. It's amazing how many people, all these little white rental cars at the trailheads, you know. And the lots are filled. All this summer it was amazing.
Well, also, as you say, right now it's a more attractive be outdoors away from other people.
Right.
Right. Activity people can do.
Yep.
Well, so how have you dealt with private land for the historic trail?
Well, we adjudicated, I don't know, many miles, hundreds, maybe 350 miles, and that was through the Alliance for, a lot of land questions and locations and so forth, and that's about, over the past 5 years or so. The Alliance basically financed a team of state employees to adjudicate and get on the map so that those parcels that were adjudicated. And I think now we're down to just some questions on native lands. There may be some private too, but not many parcels. They got most of it done. And that is a huge, huge step. Now, as far as the Trailblazers down here, we actually have gotten easements through private property. I mean, legal easements. Not many, I think just two. But they were key parcels and managed to get easements to those.
Yeah, so how did you go about doing that?
Well, I knew the owners, and this was Virginia Darling, mm-hmm. of Brown and Hawkins fame,
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that difficult. She just said, what do you want? And
she had a historic bent to her.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So that one, and let's see. And I think they were both from, maybe twice we went begging to Virginia. And yeah, so we were.
And is there money involved in that, putting an easement?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so you didn't have to finance some kind of a project to convince the landowner.
No. No, that was an easy one. And then it seems like, well, the state, we deal with the state quite a bit, too, this, you know, since this transfer land. Back when we started, it was pretty much Chugach Forest, Forest Service right up to the edge of town practically. Mm-hmm. But and then they transferred land from to the state and the state to the borough.
Oh.
And, you know, it gets a bit complicated, but so far, you know, it's worked.
Well, that's why I was asking about, is it in the borough comprehensive plan? So if they're going to permit something, they see, oh, there's a trail there.
Yeah, apparently it must be. I couldn't say for sure.
Okay.
But it must be, because whenever the borough's over here doing stuff, I hear about it. I mean, they contact me and, you know, where is the trail supposed to be or what have you. So I think we're pretty much on the same page with the borough.
Yeah. I don't know that that's the same for the whole trail.
No. And like I say, this adjudication is huge. I mean, that's a stroke of, I mean, it's every bit as important as getting a trail on the Kenai Peninsula, because you got to know where the trail is and what have you. So
adjudication is when land is officially transferred in ownership and documented?
The ownership is nailed down, so to speak, and registered.
Okay.
Yeah. And that obviously that is good for the trail.
Right. And that, so like with private land, you buy a house, you get the title to it. So this is for like state land?
It may come from the state. A lot of it did. You know, the fact of the matter is the state of Alaska owns, I don't know, a huge percentage of the Iditarod Trail. And the feds, very, very little. There's a lot more now with getting it down here in the Chugach Forest,
right.
But BLM has, 52 miles of trail?
Is that because when the trail was designated, it was from BLM? The state hadn't received its selections yet, and now they have?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, it's just the way the land conveyance went.
Right.
You know, wherever the boundaries.
Because initially it was mostly BLM land. Before we had a state, wasn't it a lot of public land?
Right. Oh, yeah. It's all, I mean, almost all public. Federal land, yeah. One agency or the other.
Right.
So.
And then what, the native land, how is that handled?
Well, it's handled as though you're dealing with private property, so it's, mm-hmm. And the original management plan does not allow for eminent domain. I mean, can't condemn land and for reasons like the trail.
Mm-hmm.
But in the interim here, a few years back, it was arranged for national trails, you can buy land from a willing seller.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a plus.
And where do you get the money to buy that land?
Yeah, well, that's another thing.
But all of this land conveyance and adjudication, that relates to a trail easement across state
across
land?
State land, borough land, city land, private land.
You're not actually buying the trail corridor. I mean, you're not removing the trail corridor from state ownership if it's on a state parcel.
Well, in essence, you are. I mean, it's being transferred to a nationally administered trail.
Okay.
If you want to look at it that way.
But it's but that nationally administered trail is by BLM, yeah.
Right.
So, has that caused any difficulty having that mixed management?
Well, no. I tell you where we're getting the most problems is closer to civilization you are, the more problems you have. Like in the Wasilla, Kinnick area, you know, that because it's developed so much. But we're pretty good. We're actually pretty good all the way. Pretty much the length of the trail, thanks to this team of adjudicators. And like I said, there's not many, 200, I'm guessing, I think I've heard 225 miles or something like that that's not adjudicated. So that's
pretty good.
Yeah.
What are some of the issues in the Wasilla Matsu area that you mentioned?
Well, the development, roads and the trail. You know, we want the trail and other trails there too, but you know, how are you going to cross a major highway? Well, you go under it, you know, and that of course takes money and someone knows. But the borough, Matsu Borough, has done a pretty good job with trails, with dog trails. For one thing, Vern Halter has been the borough mayor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And
That helps,
yeah.
You have a musher
as
the mayor. Well, yeah, the Wasilla, let's say that whole area still has a good contingent of active dog mushers.
Yeah, yep.
Sort of like Fairbanks, Two Rivers.
Yep.
Also. That probably helps.
And don't forget, mushing's the state sport.
That's right. Well, I was wondering about the trail use issues too, if there's user conflicts with motorized, non-motorized mushing versus snow machining or biking, or is that all open to everybody?
Pretty much. The whole concept was it's a multi-use trail, and that includes caterpillars in the mining areas, you know. And so far it's worked. But it is a multi-use trail.
There haven't been any problems with, like, you know, cats in the mining area or a lot of ATV use near the urban centers that caused ruts and problems.
Well, the you know, let's face it, except for 2 weeks, the trail is pretty much belongs to whoever lives along it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So here comes the race. Well, you know, you can accommodate the race if you got a stockpile of tailings or something next to a mine and it's piled on the trail, you go around it, you know, get the race through there. That's all you need to do.
Right. Well, I was thinking, you know, some trails get big ruts in them from
a
four-wheeler, and then it's very hard to mush. You need a lot of snow to fill that in.
Yeah, you're right. And there's some of that, of course.
Yeah. But there's maybe the local trailblazers go out and fill that in.
Yeah, and that's what we're supposed to, that's what we're there for, is to maintain the trail.
Okay.
One of the reasons, of course.
Well, since you've been on the advisory council and then the alliance, do you have any thoughts about what each group has done? Do they do things differently?
Well, there is.
Have you noticed a difference between them?
Well, there is no advisory council anymore.
No, I know, but there was a council.
Yeah.
And it did things, and then it went away, and now there's the alliance.
Yeah, actually, there was another council. What do you call it? Sunset one?
Yeah.
And then, because there wasn't much had been done, they established another.
As an incorporated?
No.
Oh.
No, there's a second advisory council.
Oh, I haven't heard about that one.
And
what was that?
And they reduced the number of members from 20 in the original to 11, I think. 10 or 11.
Okay.
And we just carried on with that until the that was sunsetted, and thus enters the alliance.
Okay. And you probably don't remember the year of this second council.
No, well, it was after, I think it was 7 years, so, you know, somewhere after 7 years, in comes the second council.
Oh, okay.
And then that 7 years ran out, and now we have the alliance.
Okay.
Private nonprofit.
Right. So, you said those early meetings of the council, you didn't feel like they accomplished much. Did they eventually accomplish anything?
Well, yes and no. I mean, that they were, we were pretty active as far as public awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I would say pretty heavy on that, of course. And lobbying for funds, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to work on the membership, building up the membership in the Trailblazer groups and establishing those, which we weren't real successful yet. So yeah, I mean, and the fact that we just kept plugging along is important. I mean, there's a continuity,
mm-hmm.
which is essential. And you know, we didn't build a lot of trail, or we didn't do a, you know, that sort of thing. Didn't build shelter cabins like we're doing nowadays,
right.
Like we're in the housing business. yeah. But with the alliance, of course, things changed. And
how so?
Well, for one thing, we started getting funds. And we had full-time supervisor, trail...
The administrator, right?
Administrator, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, things changed. We got the Forest Service on board for the Southern Trek, which is huge.
Mm-hmm. So were there things with the council that you wish could have been done that weren't?
Oh yeah, I wish we could have had a trail down all the way to from Anchorage or from the, say, Hatcher or Crow Pass to Seward in and being used.
Before now.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. What do you think the biggest obstacles or challenges have been in all these years? Or still are, or currently
yeah,
are?
Well, I'm so much more optimistic now than I used to be. So I don't think we have any obstacles really that we're not attacking, and with the hope of good results for the trail. You know, there's bridges and there's always trail building and all that, you know, the Southern Trek. But, you know, things are looking up.
You think there are more people in the public excited about it and involved?
Well, there's more people in the public using the segment of the trails that we have. And let's face it, if you're going to hike the Iditarod Trail, you're going to be doing it on the peninsula pretty much.
Well, yeah, the other part you have to hike in the winter.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, personally, I would not want to hike the swamps and the rivers
in
the flats.
Well, you can't. I mean, it's, no.
And it wasn't, as a historic trail, it was a winter trail, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And they used the heavy duty stuff for mining, and that was barged in
mm-hmm.
in the summer, you know. So, but the dog teams did their thing in the winter. for sure.
And they used horses too.
Oh yeah.
Which always surprises me.
Yep.
That they wouldn't just post hole through.
Yeah. Yeah, mushers loved that when the horses did. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. How many dogs broke their legs on that one?
Really?
I don't know. So the Alliance is now a nonprofit, and the Advisory Council was
is no more.
Do you think one form worked better than the other?
No, I think the Alliance. There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
Because now you've got private people, not just government people. And that, you know, like I say, that's nothing negative against the government, whether I did or our trail is concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the way things are. I mean, money has priorities, you know, and the trail was pretty much low priority for many years.
Right.
And that, even to the point where they couldn't even provide personnel, full-time personnel.
Well, the Alliance is big on partnerships.
Right.
And I don't know, the Advisory Council must have been also.
Yes. Yeah. That is reflected, in fact, in the composition of the advisory councils. I mean, they tried to bring in, like, railroad and, all different entities along the trail, definitely native groups. So, yeah, I mean.
Have you been involved in trying to build some of those partnerships? And how that works?
Well, I suppose I have been.
Well, how do you think
I don't like to sound vague, but I mean, it's.
Well, obviously with the Trailblazers, you have been. But how do you think that's worked, having those partners?
Well, that's absolute. I think it's great. More people can get involved, more groups can get involved. And because there's nobody there saying, we don't want that trail, you know, cover it over, you know, get rid of it. Everybody, all the partners are pro-trail.
Right.
I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be our partners, right?
Right?
So it's like a plus. I mean, there's not much negativism.
You don't have to try and convince a partner to become pro-trail.
Right.
You seek them out as partners because you know they're going to be supportive?
Yes, yes. And we're getting a lot, people coming to us, you know, how can we help? What can we do? And, you know, we had a presence at the state fair for several years, and we got a lot in membership and, you know, people offering to help and what have you through that exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And do at the Iditarod race start, do you guys have a presence there?
Yeah, small one, but yeah.
I don't know, either the ceremonial or the real start, I don't know.
Yeah, well.
Probably the ceremonial.
The real start generally. Okay. Had a booth out there. But now again, with the plague, things have changed, but hopefully it'll get back.
Yeah, this is all what you've been doing.
Yeah.
There's
one thing you asked a bit ago about how things might be improved. I think that what we really need is a state representative with the advisory, or
on the Alliance.
Rather with the Alliance.
You don't have one?
No, I think, no, the state does not have a person dedicated to the Iditarod.
Oh, like the BLM person.
Right, exactly, because a vast, vast majority of the land is on state. It goes over state land.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, we've worked on that, tried to get someone involved, but so far the state won't budge on it.
It's because of money?
I guess.
I mean, I'm just assuming that would be one of the reasons.
Well, it's always a good excuse, you know, but it's amazing what we can find money for if we want to. But anyway, that I think would be a real improvement in everything, because you work with the state. like I say, most of the trail goes over state land. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes sense, at least a part-time person.
Right. Are you president of the Trailblazers?
Here?
Here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And have been since the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah. Since about 1980, I guess.
Yeah. And again, a small group of dedicated people.
Yeah, but we got a good bunch.
Good.
We do.
That's great.
Yeah.
I see these, you know, comprehensive plan documents you have out on the table, and it makes me want to ask about them, what you think about them.
Well, I'm pretty impressed. they did this would be the work by, you know, the group before. Most of this information was gotten before it was submitted, you know, even into a, welded into a management plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is the preliminary information, and that was boiled down and put in these documents.
Right.
And I mean, there's a lot of work, that went into these comprehensive management plans. Yeah.
And do you feel like they're being followed? Are they being implemented at all?
They're in need of revision. And that's one of the projects that we've got on the back burner with the Alliance. It's going to take a lot of work.
Yeah.
And, I say it's just time. You know, time has passed. Almost all plans, city plans, you name it, have to be revisited and redone from time to time. And this one is there.
Do you have anything specific in there that you...
Well, this one emphasizes greatly the role of Trailblazers. And so far the way it's working that we only have three Trailblazer groups. And I don't know... I guess we're functioning okay as long as the government's willing to keep funding stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to see more Trailblazer groups for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, make the segments smaller. Like we bit off way more than we could chew. The Seward Iditarod Trailblazers were all the way to Crow Pass.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, think about it.
It's a long way.
Yeah. So that's why we tried to get one going in Moose Pass. We haven't given up on that. And there was, for temporarily, one for Crow Pass. When Bill Devine was the spearhead on that. And
yeah, you'd think in Girdwood that there'd be...
Yeah, and there was some renewed interest there. I know Pulaski and I went to Girdwood, and 'cause they have a community organization there, you know, which would fit in really good for trailblazing. But we went and tried to get them organized, and it didn't pan out yet.
Yeah, I think the Eagle River end might be another option.
Mm-hmm.
For that.
Yeah, break them up into segments to get the Connect guys going again. And they could get us out too. That's a long haul there too, but...
Yeah.
McGrath.
Yeah, because that's once you start getting out there, communities are farther apart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right.
And they have to have a bigger segment. The other thing I noticed in those management plans is there's a lot in there for like exhibits and things that they were proposed that were going to happen or should happen, and they haven't happened.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know why they haven't happened, or are there still plans to do them?
No, I don't know how to address that at all. Why something doesn't happen? I mean, we always blame it on lack of money. But other than that, I really don't know.
Well, and I guess it's in the idea of revising it. Would some of those things fall under being revised that...
Oh, yes, and I think a serious look at trailblazers. And, you know, if we're not the leaders of the pack, then let's not say so, you know. This is supposed to be a low-key federal government operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it turned out the way it is, because, I mean we feds put a lot of money in this trail now.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, in the comprehensive plan, there's probably a lot about the conveyances and the trail designation and things like that that have been accomplished.
Right.
So you don't have to
right.
put those in
right.
as to-dos.
Right. It doesn't have to be a central theme anyway.
Yeah. One of the things that has been mentioned is not only the centennial dog race that started, but there was something with a bicentennial commission in the trail. Does that ring a bell to you? Like a bicentennial commission maybe in Anchorage. I don't know much about it.
It doesn't with me, Karen.
Okay. And I don't know if it was the bicent. It would have been the bicentennial of Alaska Purchase. 77, something in the mid-70s.
Well,
right? Wouldn't
19? Well,
wouldn't 1977 have been the bicentennial of Purchase?
Well, 70.
1867 to 1967 to.
Yeah.
1970? No, 2007. I can do math.
All right.
I don't. So nothing's ringing a bell about bicentennial.
Nope.
Okay. The other thing I was just thinking about, the public education and stewardship of the trail, is it's obvious when it's your local trail.
Yeah.
You know, the Seward or the Kinnick.
Well, we have ITREC, the ITREC program.
Okay.
That's our main education program for the Alliance.
Right.
I did a trail in every
community,
yeah,
right. ITREC. And that's with teachers?
Yep, bringing in teachers and having them, they draw up their own curriculum, you know, and they discuss it and try it out and what have you.
I know that at one point they had workshops down here, didn't they, for one of those sessions?
Yeah, it has been, again, prior to the epidemic here, but they have the fall session down here, is that right?
I think so.
And then the spring session they had in Fairbanks, in Nome.
Right. For the end of the race, that would make sense.
Yeah, although it wasn't, it was after the end of the race.
Okay.
I couldn't quite figure that one out.
You'd think they'd want to meet, but maybe because there wasn't room in any hotel.
Well, yeah, that's probably,
it. But so when they came here, did you speak to the group?
Right, yeah. Both Lee and I, we did our show.
Your show.
our Iditarod show.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then we've done several of those, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I was just thinking, though, that, you know, in terms of public education and appreciation and support for having a historic trail, how do you get people in other parts of the state to care? And or is that important?
Well, I don't know. Alaska's a big place. I mean, Alaskans are Alaskans, right? I mean, I'm real impressed and taken with the Chilkoot Trail.
Mm-hmm.
I don't live down there. That's a jillion miles away.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But it's Alaska.
Right.
It's part of Alaska. So I don't know if you're saying, asking if we have a campaign to draw in Alaskans. Specifically, only the ITREC program that I can think of, that's all Alaska, idea of being teachers along the trail.
Right, it's all about people along the trail.
Yeah, but that doesn't don't get many Sitka or Ketchikan people.
Well, and I guess what I'm getting to is, do you think it's important for people in Sitka or in Fairbanks to care about the Iditarod Historic Trail?
Yes, absolutely. And why? Well, especially when it comes to protective measures, where you have to lobby somehow, you know, influence somebody, government or whoever. It's nice to have a consensus, that's for sure, of statewide people. Yeah.
And, you know, as historians, there is something to say about it's important for people to know their history.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the rest of the world thinks that. But, well, what has kept you involved in this particular project for so long?
Well, I don't know. It's just it's been a lifelong interest of mine.
Well, but
like I say, I'm kind of partial to Seward, for one thing, and I'm pretty excited about the past, you know, but the role that Seward has played in the development of Alaska, and of course the trail connected to it, and I just I don't know, I like history for one thing.
Well, yeah, but you know, a lot of people after so many years with an organization would be, I'm done, I don't want to do that anymore.
This one isn't even a life membership. You got to ante up every year. But I belong to like the Hope Historic Hope Sunrise, and I just about as well. Wait a minute, probably longer on the board of the Resurrection Bay Historic Society, and then back home in Minnesota, I belong to that historic society.
That's great.
So I love history, and I guess this is just continuation of that, you know, of that interest.
Is there anything in particular that you feel particularly responsible for having been accomplished in it?
Yes, I do. The very fact that we're developing a trail on the Kenai Peninsula. I mean, that to me is a, I guess if I was going to boast about anything, that would be catching that in before the finalization of the management plan. And then, I mean, it's taken a while, but it's working.
Great.
As far as local trailblazer stuff, I guess, just putting the trail in, I mean, just the raw trail.
The trail breaking, building, I guess.
Yeah, and we have an access trail to the Iditarod up at north of here a little bit, Bear Lake, that's part of the trail. It's part of the trail. It's access to the trail, but it's part of it, and it goes right along the east side of Bear Lake, and then so we claim that, the trailblazers claim that. Well, the flip side of that is that the city of Seward has tried to annex all the way to the north end of Bear Lake. At least twice that I can remember. And we advocated against that in favor of the trail because it goes along there. And I'm almost sure that had we not thwarted that effort twice, that there would be cheek to jaw cabins all the way around the lake there. And people love it the way it is, and we took basically a game trail around the north end of the lake and then up over the divide and claim that. And again, the city would have loved to have a bunch of cabins lined up along there for tax purposes, mm-hmm. what have you. But we all did them on that twice, so hopefully it'll stay that way.
Yeah.
But it's in, and the Forest Service has put a major bridge in.
Wow.
along there. So it's been the Iditarod Trail for many years now. It almost qualifies for that 50-year stuff.
The historic. It sounds like the obstacles or challenges have been land management agency things you have to deal with. Is that a fair statement?
Well, yeah, but again, we've had cooperation with the Forest Service, and in a way, and this is just my feeling, I couldn't say for sure, but I think the Forest Service, the local, you know, this mm-hmm. district, the people who've been managing that over the years, have appreciated the fact that we're here. For instance, we built for this end of the trail anyway, a major bridge in a Sunday afternoon.
Wow.
And you can imagine what that would have taken if the Forest Service had to plan it and, you know, on and on it goes. We put the bridge in. And in fact, we basically stole the material from the stockpile the Forest Service had. And we put the bridge in. And it's nice. Nobody's, you know, it's okay. In. People are using it. It's surplus stuff, it was free labor, and we didn't study it to death. You know, and down the road, four mm-hmm. or 5 years, sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, your Trailblazers group shows as a model that local involvement, you need local trail users and trail
right.
advocates, whether it's the Iditarod Trail or any other trail.
And the that bike path, and what we call a bike path, mm-hmm. but the trail in town there along the beach.
Yeah.
I mean, that was our project. We contacted a local contractor who provided free gravel and put it in place and got, you know, the base in. The city was having a paver in, and we talked them into half-price asphalt for the thing. The city paid it, but it was through us. And it was done. I mean, it's in. And people
yeah.
love it. That thing gets more use even in the winter, you know, when there's nobody out around much.
Right.
So
that's great. Yeah, I said it shows that you need interested local people who are willing to work hard.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your time today. Thank
well,
you.
I appreciate your time and your effort. It's it's part of history. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else that comes to mind or when you looked at the questions I had sent in advance?
Well, just as far as the alliance goes, we've been in business now quite a few years, and I think it's a great organization. It's well run. I served as president of that for a year or so, but anyway, speaking of the present alliance, you have some dedicated people there, and they're getting things done, and it's gratifying to me after all these years. I think I figured out, 41 years? With either the advisory council or the alliance, so it's gratifying to me to see such a group in operation. They're getting things done.
Good. All right. Well, thank you.